Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Payne and Pendergast, we're at the end of the 9 o'clock hour. We go. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Big thanks to the General John McClain, the Hall of Famer, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. All up on the podcast. If you missed it, John had some good nuggets in there. You can download it where you get podcasts, radio.com, iTunes, the whole thing. So we've been talking about J.J. Watt's destination quite a bit, and this is going to be a big topic as more and more teams, or maybe more appropriately media members for teams around the NFL, say, hey, he's seriously considering our team and our team and our team. So I put up this prop bet over the weekend, and I like doing things like this sometimes, and I'll lay this out. A Pender Poll prop bet, and you got to choose one side or the other. J.J. Watt's destination will come from which group? And I put a group of four teams together, so you get all four of those teams and you cash your ticket, or you get all 28 other teams. The four teams are these four teams: the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I have the two betting favorites in Vegas and the two teams that played in the Super Bowl a week and a half ago. You can take that side and get all four teams, and if he lands with any of those four teams, you get to cash your ticket. Or, or you can take the other side where you get all 28 other teams and you cash the ticket. Seth, 86% of the people spoke loudly and said, yeah, we will take the four-pack of the Packers, the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But by God, Seth Payne was not in that 86%.
This is why professional gamblers like myself live in the palaces we do to make all the money off of the suckers, right. Like you guys, yeah, because I understand that, for one, your field, I feel like you thought you put together this this formidable force, this dream team of potential J.J. Watt destinations.
Exactly.
And frankly, I think at least two of those four are all but guaranteed not to be J.J. Watt destinations, including the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why? Because I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers even know who their quarterback is going to be. Hey, does that sound familiar? Oh, gosh. Would J.J. Watt be comfortable in a situation where he doesn't even know who the quarterback's going to be next year? Oh, wait, yeah, that's right. That's right. He's leaving that current one right now. So the Steelers were – it's not clear whether Ben Roethlisberger is going to come back. If he does come back, is Ben Roethlisberger even good? That's a team that lost six games in a row to close out the season. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for him to be – you know what? J.J. is not going to say to his brothers, hey, guys, I want to come and basically turn what could be a really cool thing into something that Steelers fans will deride a generation from now. When they'll say, hey, remember when we should have been fixing the offense, but instead we spent $10 million a year on J.J. Watt and the offense sucked?
He would become the Ed Reed of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, except like with the actual football playing ability.
Right, and not getting
He'd still
surgery.
Be good at football.
And not getting surgery in May.
Yeah. But it could turn from a really cool story into, oh, wow, I can't believe we spent money. When the defense was already awesome, I can't believe we spent money on signing another defensive player when the offense was falling apart at the seams. So I don't think it makes a lot of sense from J.J.'s or Pittsburgh's standpoint to bring J.J. Watt there, unless you're going to play for the minimum. And there's no reason for J.J. to play for the minimum. He's still one of the best defensive players in the NFL.
Not for like the 12th best team in the league. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you play for the minimum, you go to the Chiefs or the Buccaneers. You don't go to a team that might not even finish second in its own division.
So I don't think he goes to Pittsburgh. And then when it comes to Kansas City or Tampa Bay – Kansas City does make sense in a lot of respects. I don't think it's as simple for them to sign JJ. And they already do have, like, they've got their guy on the edge. They've got their guy in the middle in Chris Jones. I would say somewhat along the same lines as the same thing I'll say for Tampa Bay. You got to pick and choose where you're going to spend your money when you're on it, when you have a really good team like that. Tampa Bay already has an awesome defense. Now, the difference is that they're going to lose. They could potentially lose both Lavonte David and Shaq Barrett. They're going to have to keep one of those guys, and they're going to have to spend big money to do it. Both those guys are free agents. I think they're going to focus. I would imagine that Tampa's going to really focus their attention on retaining those guys. If Bruce Arians has any say in the matter, in the Super Bowl party, and it looked like he was pretty drunk at the time, but he basically said, your asses aren't going anywhere. We're bringing back everybody. Yeah. If they do bring back Lavonte David and Shaq Barrett, it's going to be really hard to spend money on J.J. Watt. So I think Green Bay is the only one of those four that really makes a whole lot of sense. So it's Green Bay versus, in my mind, then the Baltimore Ravens, perhaps the Cleveland Browns, the Tennessee Titans, the Seattle Seahawks, some of those teams that are viable contenders, but it also make as much sense as those other teams.
The Bills, the Rams.
Oh, the Bills. Yeah, I forgot the Bills. Yeah.
The Rams. I mean, that's Seth, in some ways, you know, I know you were, you're saying, hey, this dream team you put together somewhat sarcastically. Seth, I put it together to make sure that 86% of the people would want to bet on that because I'm the house in this case. You should be complimenting me because I'm going to be paying you and your other 14% of the people who've paid on this, but I will be getting money from 86% of the people.
Yeah, but I'm going to move the line because I'm going to put big money on that. I'm going to.
A whale came in. A former NFL player with knowledge has bet on this.
I am the sharp. I'm the one sharp that's going to. Boy, but Green Bay, the more I think about Green Bay, it makes so much sense. And think about it from this perspective. Like, J.J. Watt has such a unique relationship with the fan base here in Houston. Unlike really almost any other athlete in any sport. Not that other athletes don't have really strong relationships. It's just unique here, I think, because of the Harvey dynamic and certain other factors. It's just unique. And for a guy who spent his entire career having that unique relationship with a fan base, it's got to hold a special attraction to think of going back to your home state, playing for the team that you grew up cheering for. And also, honestly, to be a little bit more cynical about it, just from a financial perspective, Green Bay fans are everywhere. And that is a nationwide deal. You become a legendary Packers player. And if you play on a Super Bowl team for the Packers, that is a passport to enduring marketing success and what have you. So it makes sense from an emotional and a financial standpoint and a chance to win a Super Bowl because Aaron Rodgers is there.
I think, you know, Seth, nobody can get mad at J.J. Watt if he picks Green Bay. Like, I don't even think you can be a Bears fan, a Vikings fan, or a Lions fan in that division and be mad that J.J. Watt would be picking the Green Bay Packers. And certainly as a Texan fan, I wouldn't be mad if he picked the Green Bay Packers. I think it'd be a really cool story. I think the other part of that too, boy, when you lay out the family part of it, you know who that would be really, really cool for? His parents, you know, the people in his family who grew up Packer fans probably much longer than they were J.J. Watt fans. You know what I mean? Like, them becoming J.J. Watt fans started with him playing peewee football. My guess is his folks, I'm assuming they're from Wisconsin originally, that they grew up rooting for the Packers. I mean, his dad was a fireman in Pewaukee. I'm assuming that's not a job he transferred in from L.A. to be a fireman in Wisconsin.
He wasn't the jerk at the fire station that was, like, rooting against the Packers. Right. It was a Mr. Watt. Like, yeah. They called him Mr. Watt because he was so grumpy all the time. Yeah, right. Cheering for the Lions. I also wonder if J.J. played in Green Bay and his wife in Kalia's down in Chicago, it's a three-hour drive. Does JJ buy a helicopter at that point? I was wondering if you would just like find a little private plane. It's 3 hours. You don't need a jet for that. Like, I don't want to spend his money ridiculously, but you know, a little single prop or something. Or does he go with a helicopter so he can just, you know, maybe just land right on her building?
Helicopter. If it's me, I say no because helicopters are scary. But JJ Watt probably is more courageous than I am. Is my guess. So I don't know.
Helicopters in winter would be really scary.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're just too naked up there. You know what I mean? Like it's just.
They're so cool, though. That was my dream when I was a kid. My fantasy of being. Everybody has their fantasy of what you'd be like if you were a billionaire or what have you. Mine was that I would have like a badass helicopter, the kind that has. You can seat six people in the back facing each other. Yeah. It's like flying in first class, but you're in a helicopter. And I just drop that down just pretty much anywhere. You know, and when you're a kid and you're dumb, you have this feeling that you can, like, just land it on a city street and stuff. That was going to be my personal vehicle, was a badass helicopter.
Yeah, if you land in a helicopter, that's why a lot of college coaches are doing that with the, with recruiting. They're flying helicopters places if it's nearby.
Because you can land in the kids' yard. It saves a lot of time.
You can land in his yard, or you can land like over in the in the track and field area at their high school complex, and then walk over.
That's safer. That's safer.
Just strut over and landing in the kid's backyard. Yeah.
Yeah,
and just strut over to the field, and everybody's like, "Whoa, who's that?" And they're like, "Yeah, there goes Tom."
Who's the football player that showed up after a holdout in a helicopter? Was it Bosworth?
Probably
showed up in a helicopter. Yeah, it wasn't received well by the veterans on the team.
That sounds.
It was either it was some brash young rookie like Gastineau or Bosworth or somebody like that.
If it was Bosworth, and he did it, and he probably is unapologetic about it, and yet at the same time hates himself for doing it. If I know Bosworth, he's got that kind of duality going on in his life.
Bosworth, like, he strikes me as the kind of guy that. Loved having the image and everything, like, but that his core, like, his dad probably didn't approve, right?
Yeah.
So he's always got a little guilty sense of, man, I'm supposed to be acting more just like a roughneck or something,
big
not
time.
Just a flashy guy.
Yes, yeah. big time. All right.
Yeah, after this, he showed up to Seahawks practice in a helicopter. That's what he did.
Yeah. That was back when he was the boss, man. He still had the haircut going. People don't realize, like, I know Brian a little bit. Like, when I tell my kids, I'm like, you don't realize – this dude was an iconic figure. Like in the 80s, there were few athletes who were more iconic representing the 80s than Brian Bosworth. And landing a helicopter at Seattle sounds exactly like something he would do.
Well, yeah, and that's where they don't realize. Like, kids these days understand and know the mullet because there's modern versions of it floating around out there with hipsters such as Ted Cruz now sporting a mullet.
Yep.
Did you see that, by the way?
No.
Ted Cruz has a mullet. I don't know if it's a Photoshop or not, but I saw a picture the other day where he's got a but Boz's was like a mullet, but with a multicolored racing stripes down the side of your scalp. It was really cool.
It was a mohawk with the stripes down the side where he kind of shaved the sides, and then the mullet was like little like almost rat tails almost off of that thing. It was.
Boy, I had a dream last night that I had a mohawk and people were making fun of me for it.
Really?
And I just realized that, like, at this, I could have a mohawk today and nobody can do a damn thing about it. I never had one as a kid because my mom wouldn't let me.
Is your head?
But why the hell do I not show up tomorrow with a mohawk? I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
Is your head still mohawkable right now? How would the mohawk look for you?
It would be a mo-mover, a mo-home-over, a mo-home.
A
Mahomes over sounds both somehow like it sounds weirdly too much like Mahomes, but also somehow homophobic too.
That's what Mahomes should name his, the Mahomes over.
The Mahomes over.
I mean, there's State Farm commercials about his haircut. Name it the Mahomes over.
I would have my mohawk because of my hair pattern would end up looking like a little. It would look like a male. Male genital organ. It would have a little knob at the front, and then an indentation, and then a shaft behind it.
It would get people talking for sure. Oh my! I'm looking at the quotes. Andre Johnson was on a podcast and spoke out about the Texans again. Oh boy, he's not changing his stance. We'll have the quotes for you next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Guest Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday. Appreciate you tuning in. Stay safe, stay warm. There's a lot of you still out there without power. I am one of you. I am with you. And we will be with you throughout the day. Keep that radio.com app handy. Seth, Andre Johnson is speaking out again, and now he's not doing it via Twitter. He's doing it on Harry Douglas's podcast. Harry Douglas, a 10-year NFL veteran wide receiver. He has a show called The HD Connection, and Andre Johnson was a guest on it. And as you can imagine, one of the big topics, big takeaways from it was he was asked about the tweet that he put up several weeks ago, backing Deshaun Watson, encouraging Deshaun Watson to stand his ground, saying that the Texans wasted players' careers, and saying that nothing good has happened in and for the organization since Jack Easterby arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the quotes. We don't have the audio. Landry and John are going to have the audio, I know, during their show. So if you want to hear the audio, then that's fine. Just technical issues. But I do want to read the quotes, and then we can dig into some of this stuff here. Andre said, I've been around the organization for a long time, and you know I worked there last season, and it's just certain things you see. Certain things you see, you know, that aren't right. For the caliber of player that Deshaun is, I wouldn't want Deshaun to try and go through that. I went through those things myself with the organization, and I did that for 12 years. Because sometimes people say, what do you wish you could change differently about your career? And I always tell them, I wish I was a little more selfish and not always being just a team guy. Because things that you want the organization to do, they're not always going to do it. But I think sometimes the organization doesn't listen to what you have to say. Finishing up. Us as players, we're in the locker room every day. We know what goes on with this team. So we're not telling you things to take over your organization. We're just trying to do things to help. And I think sometimes top people in the organization, they just don't listen to players. And that's something that I felt like I had to deal with a lot when I was here. So a lot there, because Andre's tenure, obviously, is a unique one because he was in the building for the last few years, when it got really, really bad because he was on the coaching staff. But obviously his time as a player extends over multiple coaches, played for every coach up until David Culley, every coach that had ever coached this organization, and has obviously been through both tenures of McNair as ownership of this team.
Yeah, it's tough because I think in any organization there are always little things that are issues or that are wrong. There's always a bunch of people in various positions that are unqualified. That includes teams that win Super Bowls. But they're... As I talk to people just over the course of the last year, there just seemed to be a common theme of like a pervasive dysfunction, or just the fact that there's just, people would say there's just something every day, just little things that just are a pain in the butt or annoying or aren't right. And I don't, you know, I'm not a reporter, without people, there's enough people now, there's enough smoke from people that have worked in the organization, and it came from them while they were still in the organization, not just people that are ex-employees, that things aren't operating properly. And so much of it coincides with Jack Easterby coming in. And when you have a guy, you know, the classic boss that you have who's a meddler and a micromanager yet isn't qualified to micromanage, there's nothing worse. It's one thing if your boss is a micromanager, but maybe he was also the stud salesman in the company before he got his current job. So at the very least, if he's meddling with his salespeople underneath him, at least he knows what he's talking about. At least he's micromanaging from a place of knowledge versus somebody that might really not have a clue what they're doing micromanaging you and micromanaging everybody. It creates an organization where it's just gummed up and inefficient and the exact opposite of what the promises are. And it sounds like that's what it is with the Texans right now. And I don't know, I had somebody who's an executive at a mid-sized company message me about the situation with Cal McNair and Jack Easterby and everything. And he said, you know, it's really one of the hardest things sometimes looking top down in an organization to figure out what's really going on at the ground level. That's why undercover boss is a thing. You got the people that report to you. You got your direct reports, and you want to be sure that they have authority and some level of autonomy. So it's not like you're trying to let them do your jobs, but a lot of the information you're getting is from those people. And they're telling you, hey, everything's great, everything's fine. No, okay, well, this is the reason that employee has a complaint, or this is the reason that employee has a complaint. And you also do get, you always, in an organization of any size, you have disgruntled employees who just happen to be disgruntled employees, right? Like, you know, you got, anybody listening right now works with a few people that are permanently disgruntled no matter what. So when you're looking from the top down, it's hard to sometimes figure out, okay, who is appropriately or who is deservedly disgruntled? And why is what they are saying opposite of what my Jack Easterby is saying? Yeah. That's a really hard thing to figure out. Looking at it from my perspective and having talked to people at various levels of the organization, I feel that ownership doesn't quite understand exactly the way the organization is operating and how it looks from the bottom up. And you know, Bob, the first time I had ever heard this saying was Bob McNair, when he talked about in any organization, when you're at the top and you look down, all you see is smiling faces. If it's a bunch of monkeys climbing up a tree, if you're at the top of the tree, you look down and all you see is smiling faces. For the monkeys who are looking up, all they see are a bunch of asses. And I think that right now the Texans have a lot of people in their organization that look up and they see a bunch of asses. Yeah. And I think with good reason at times. So that's the tough thing that Cal McNair has got to try to figure out is exactly why. Why are all these people saying all these things about Jack Easterby in such a way that, frankly, I don't know if I've ever seen in another football organization? Is it because, A, there's valid reasons for those people to dislike Jack Easterby? Or is it because, B, it's a vast conspiracy against some guy that nobody had ever even heard of 2 years ago? I would think that the most likely and obvious scenario is choice A. What is the motivation for anybody to have a vast conspiracy against Jack Easterby in a way that it doesn't happen like this anywhere else? You gotta read the smoke signals and figure out what's going on. Why do all these people have so many objections to Jack Easterby? It's not for no reason whatsoever. And understand that it's not just your former employees. It's not just Bob Kraft. It's current employees as well, which I hesitate to say because I feel like I'm getting employees over there fired because Jack Easterby is on a witch hunt to root out whoever he thinks might be the leak or the mole or what have you that aren't his own leaks or moles.
Yeah. Andre's perspective is unique because he played longer than anybody here. He was on the coaching staff. Seth, he was also on the committee that was hired to help give input on the general manager and the head coach. It's almost like the ad hoc committee was sort of the last salvo of the Texans not listening to Andre Johnson, if that's how he's feeling. What I also find interesting is that Landry came in and mentioned this to me. Landry's up here in the studios, and he came in. He goes, "Boy, did you see what Andre said on the HD podcast?" And I said, "No, I didn't see that, and I didn't see anything on my Twitter timeline about it last night." And I'm without power, but I'm not without a phone. And I was on Twitter last night, and I didn't see anything about it. And I think it's notable. Because I am pretty plugged in when it comes to stuff coming across my timeline. It didn't have, this time around, nearly the momentum as it did when Andre tweeted it the first time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In some ways, it's indicative that the Texans' strategy with stuff like this is successful, which is, you know what, let it die down, ignore it, and then we'll just keep whistling past the graveyard is what we'll keep
doing. People are kind of tired of it. But also, most people in Houston right now are otherwise occupied mentally and physically.
That is fair to point out as well, as we can tell on the text page.
Which, by the way, if anybody's listening is wondering, we Sean and I have talked about this. Like, okay, like, do we turn this into mostly like talking about like how awful this current situation is, or do we be a little bit of escapism for people? And I think we've chosen the escapism side. So
dude,
if you're trying to get away from the fact that and pretend you're not sitting in your car trying to stay warm right now, then yeah.
I'm trying to get away from it. This is escapism for me. My power's been out for, this is my third day without power now. So yeah, this is escapism for me.
Yeah, is it going to fizzle? I mean, at some point, does it all just kind of fizzle out and fade into the background, and Jack Easterby is this guy that people don't really like, but whatever, it is what it is, and we're just gonna move forward.
Like humidity. You know what I mean? Like, what does it sound like when people complain about it being hot in July? Like, yeah, duh. You know, it's hot in July. You know, it's Jack Easterby. Yeah, duh. He's the executive VP of whatever. You know, it's
Jack Easterby. That's a great bumper sticker. I'm popular as humidity. Yeah. I'm running on a platform of humidity.
Humidity. All right, back to actual football roster stuff. Cap casualties. The wave of cap casualties that are going to come for the Texans. Who could be the Texans' cap casualties? Where could they go shopping around the league for other teams' recyclables, we'll call it? That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so we've eventually, Nick Caserio is going to have to do a little trimming. I guess technically J.J. Watt qualifies as that for salary cap purposes. Obviously, there's a lot more wrapped up in J.J. Watt being let go by the Houston Texans, which, by the way, has that been made official yet, Seth? I've not seen a...
What's that?
The J.J. Watt release. Have you seen a press release saying that they've officially released J.J. Watt?
They did they did the press release the day that J.J. Did his video, and other teams are talking to J.J.
So
and reaching out to him.
Right.
So,
okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, unless they put out – yeah, I haven't seen – plus I saw it on Roto World or one of those sites. So, okay. Yeah, I believe – it's official.
I just don't remember seeing the email that you get normally where it's the press release and it says the Texans have released the following player. And then it just says J.J. Watt, number 99, defensive end. You know, it's.
Yeah, I believe it was wrapped up in the along kind of like the nice, hey, we wish him the best and all
gotcha.
That stuff.
Yeah, because that the one where they just have his name in there, that always feels so cold. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. Yeah, some of these announcements. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a death certificate or something, man. So J.J. Now moved on, but they're going to have to do some more work on the cap, especially, Seth, if they're going to go shopping for some new players, which I would say what Deshaun ends up doing will probably dictate how much and what type of player they end up going after, right? If Deshaun's here, then you're not nearly on the 3 or 4 year rebuild plan as you would be. You're probably more on the 2 year rebuild plan. But the Athletic's got a list of potential salary cap cuts for all the NFL teams. And the Texans, as you can imagine, have more names on here than most teams do. The least surprising one, David Johnson. David Johnson and his $11 million cap hit is expected to be gonzo out the window after this year.
I wonder what Nick Caserio thought when he came in. And boy, I'd love to figure out exactly what Nick Caserio was thinking when he saw the Texans doing all this stuff over the last 18 months, including DeAndre. Like, because I think there are two schools of thought. Sometimes when people would try to back up the DeAndre Hopkins trade, they would have their arguments for why it was okay for the Texans to trade DeAndre Hopkins. But there was never really good explanation or reason for why he was traded for the amount that he was. Or for the Texans to bring back David Johnson. And in fact, the closest explanation you ever got was Bill O'Brien basically admitted that they took David Johnson on partly to sweeten the deal to try to get a better draft pick from the Arizona Cardinals. Which really all that tells you is that they might as well have traded DeAndre Hopkins for a third round pick.
Right.
Like that's how it made the David Johnson stuff. When you factor David Johnson's contract in with the actual draft pick that the Texans received, it really lowers that value of that pick down to a third round pick. So any of the excuses for why, you know, his DeAndre Hopkins salary demands or what drove the price down, none of it makes sense. Like none of it. You could give me an argument for why you had to trade away DeAndre Hopkins, but you will never, ever, ever convince me that they didn't get 100% fleeced. And then the worst part of it was that not only did they take on David Johnson's contract, but they actually thought to themselves, yeah, he's our guy. He's our guy. I've watched him play the last 2 years, and did he go down, like, at the first hint of contact? Sure. He was nothing like the guy he was in 2016, but this is our guy full-time. That's the other scary part of it. It was just, so I wonder what Caserio was thinking watching all of that. And I wonder if in his mind he thought, well, you know, if I end up there, that's a mess I'll have to clean up.
He still has $2.1 million in guaranteed salary owed to him this year, but if they just cut him, they pay him the $2.1 million, say see you later, they'll save $6.4 million. In cap space. So there's $6.4 million, Seth. The next player, Duke Johnson. So they're basically saying, we're going to clean out the entire backfield. The Texans, Duke Johnson and David Johnson. Duke Johnson would give them about a $5 million cap savings. So
yeah,
I could see
Duke
that
Johnson,
happening.
Duke Johnson, I'm a little torn about that one because I still feel like he was never really used the way that he could be used. He was this is where Duke Johnson being a part of a quote-unquote game plan offense really blew up in their faces, because this is when guys get too clever and they start thinking, well, there will be certain teams and certain scenarios in which we'll use the running back passing game, but only then shall we unleash Duke Johnson. as opposed to kind of making it a part of your bread and butter offense and making defenses respond to you. Maybe David Culley and his staff, which includes Tim Kelly, will use Duke Johnson in a better way. I don't know if I don't need to say goodbye to Duke Johnson. I still think if he's used properly, that's not a bad deal.
The last big ticket one is Bernardrick McKinney. I think it's a lock that Bernardrick McKinney is gone after this year. They'd save about $7 million in cap space by letting him go.
Especially because they're a 4-3 now.
Yeah.
The other thing, I mean, you could say, well, look, you have Zach Cunningham play the Will linebacker and have Bernardrick McKinney play the Mike linebacker perhaps. But I don't I think that'll end up being too much money for both those guys. I think Zach Cunningham's best position in this defense would be as the middle linebacker. So that makes Bernardrick McKinney redundant.
They are listing in this piece in The Athletic, they're just listing potential cap cuts for all the teams, for all 32 teams. Did you see any names on here that were interesting that if you were the Texans you might look to go shopping for?
I thought that Chandler Jones, who
Patriots
South? Chandler Jones would save the Cardinals $15 million. He had a biceps tendon tear last year. The Cardinals aren't in cap trouble at all. I think they've got they're right around middle of the pack. So I'd be surprised if they let go of Chandler Jones. But if they did let go of Chandler Jones, and if his price has been driven down at all by age or what have you, I'd be very intrigued by having Chandler Jones, because that would be potentially a guy that could help make this defense, this Lovie Smith defense, work. The other one, too, Jimmy Graham, who was paid way too much money by the Bears, but ended up being good for the Bears, but he was given this contract where people looked around and thought, is Bill O'Brien doing these deals? Why are they paying Jimmy Graham quite that much money? Jimmy Graham would save the Bears $7 million. If the Texans were to bring in Jimmy Graham, perhaps as a way of saying, hey, look, hey, we've got a name brand tight end here. We know he's old, but we got him at a discount, and he's going to be here for at least a couple years. Well, maybe we bring along some of these younger guys. Maybe that's enough of an appeal to Deshaun Watson, but it's not going to kill you moving forward, because if you lose out on Deshaun Watson, then you can let go of Jimmy Graham after a year or two.
God, has anybody's star fallen? I mean, guys' stars have fallen more than Jimmy Graham, but has anybody fallen more from being a complete game changer, like a paradigm-changing player that he was in New Orleans, to really just a guy with multiple teams now? Like, remember Jimmy Graham, Seth? Jimmy Graham was the reason why they were talking about having to come up with some sort of special franchise tag for him, because they tagged him as a tight end, but he had numbers like a wide receiver with Drew Brees in New Orleans. It was a big point of contention. And then
it wasn't his numbers. It was that he lined up away from outside the formation. He lined up as a wide receiver the majority of the time.
Right, yeah. Right. And so that was a big deal. And then ultimately they trade him to Seattle for a center. Yeah. I think it was Muncy they traded for. Now he's been on Green Bay, and he's been on Chicago, and he's just kind of bounced around. He's gone from the guy that was at the center of one of the most controversial franchise tag discussions to being a dude who's a total journeyman now. It's wild.
He's the most receptions he's had in a season since that trade is 65. But there's been a whole lot of, 40s and 50s, 38 receptions in 2019 with Green Bay. He just became more of a, I don't want to say run of the mill. He still adds a lot of value, and he still has to be accounted for. But he's also, now he's 34 years old.
Right.
And I think he's almost now entered that stage where he can be a little bit like, why am I blanking on Dallas Cowboys turned Oakland Raider by way of Monday Night Football?
Jason Witten.
Tight end. Thank you, Jason Witten. My goodness. Yeah. It's getting late in the day, Sean. It's almost 10 a.m. and I'm hungry. I can't remember Jason Witten's name.
I've been up since 1:30, so it's all good. Don't worry. Continue.
What's
that? I've been up since 1:30. You sound coherent compared to me right now. Yeah.
So anyway, I think that would be an interesting one. The other one is Geno Atkins, the defensive tackle from Cincinnati. He's 32 years old. If he's being thought of as perhaps a cap casualty, he might be a nice guy to bring in to add to the pass rush. you're switching over to a 4-3 presumably with Lovie Smith, and you can maybe get him at like an Ndamukong, like a discounted Ndamukong Suh type of contract, where it's a 1 or 2 year deal. You're not paying him a whole bunch of money, but he provides something.
He's a career Bengal too, so he's one of the few players that might come here and be like, "Wow, this culture is amazing."
Hey, I was like, "What are people complaining about?"
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to a player the other day, and he was saying that you know, as I've said before too, it's not the Texans do some things well, you know, and including the way they treat their players, they do treat the players well in terms of the cafeteria, the weight room facilities, the hotels when they travel, all that stuff's top notch. It's first rate, and some of the facilities they have are really, really good, and that's where I go back to. I think that Cal McNair could settle into being a very good owner in the NFL as long as he hires the right people and the right key people to advise him and to be the main people. I personally think that if you swapped out Jack Easterby for a Thomas Dimitroff or somebody like that, they could be one of the best organizations in sport. It's as simple as that, and it's as easy as that. If you're going to have one person that's kind of guiding you and telling you what to do, so I'll say Thomas Dimitroff, not even as a general manager, but as a team president type, I think they could be flat out awesome. But right now, he's just got the wrong person whispering in his ear.
Yeah, it's been tried and true around the league. Like, owners who have been considered not great owners, if they hire the right people at the most important positions, all of a sudden, they become great owners. It's amazing how that works. Amazing how that works with hiring. This list on The Athletic, last ad here real quick, Seth. There are some cautionary tales on here about free agency and maybe some signings where you go, man, the Texans, they probably dodged a bullet on this one. Three signees that Texan fans were clamoring for just a couple of years ago are all on this list of potential cap casualties. Remember when everybody wanted Nate Solder to be the new left tackle for this football team a couple of years ago? I think it was 2018. He appears to be a potential cap casualty for the Giants. Trent Brown, the following year, ended up going on to the Raiders, former 49er. He's a potential cap casualty. Malcolm Butler was the other interesting one on here. Remember the offseason the Texans? Remember that offseason the Texans needed a corner? Pretty much every offseason? Malcolm Butler was a target. He is a potential cap casualty as well for the Titans.
You know, the thing about Nate Solder is that if you had landed him in free agency, you know what you would have at this point? You would probably have had approximately the same records over the course of a couple of years, and you would also have two first-round draft picks that you didn't have. Oh, and you'd actually spent less money than you did on Laremy Tunsil. Oh. Could you have gone 4-12 last year? I don't know. Maybe they would have only been 3-11.
Three and 13. Laremy Tunsil's worth a win. Boy, you're right.
I mean, there's something about there are various other guys that maybe wouldn't have been as good as Laremy Tunsil, but would have been adequate, and then you would have also had two extra first-round draft picks.
God, in retrospect, boy, the butterfly effect of this stuff is fascinating. I didn't even think of that. I see that in a vacuum, and I go, boy, good thing they didn't sign Nate Solder. Seth, you see things. You're a visionary. You see that signing Nate Solder and having him be a cap casualty this year actually would have been a good thing because it would have prevented the Laremy Tunsil trade. Boy, you're a genius. Next level thinking. That's really good.
Well, you know, I think that, well, for one, in free agency, you're always overspending by definition. Meltzer used to say this. You're the high bidder. So you are, like, technically overspending because you're willing to spend more than anybody else. But at least then, usually, you're still paying something driven by a kind of a market value. The problem with the Texans is that they had no concept of a market whatsoever. There was only, I want something, and I want it now. Give it to me, Daddy.
Give it to me. I want to Oompa Loompa now, Daddy. Payne and Pendergast with you. John Lopez, Landry Locker making their way into the studio. You got them at the top of the hour. I put up a poll yesterday, Seth. I thought this was a really interesting question from a listener named Ryan, who tweeted at me. He tweeted me the question. I said, that makes a good poll. I'm going to ask people this. And I'm curious what you think about this. This is a poll for Texan fans. If the Texans get a boatload of picks, including a high first for Deshaun Watson, when draft night rolls around, will you enjoy draft night or will it hurt too much because it costs Deshaun Watson? Are you going to be able to enjoy draft? Let's say the Texans get the Jets' number two overall pick. Is draft night going to be fun for you, or are you going to sit there and go, I can't believe that Deshaun Watson is gone?
It'll be fun for me because just much like with J.J. Watt, I knew what was likely coming, so I'd already done the emotional grieving beforehand. Then it becomes exciting. Plus, it's a matter of being delusional too, right? At some point, if they're able to draft either Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, oh my gosh, Trevor Lawrence, you don't think I'm going to talk myself into some level of optimism? I will be that delusional person.
I should have caveated Lawrence as a possibility. That's almost a separate conversation, you know, than this,
yeah.
Isn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah.
By the way, like usual, you are going against the grain. Only 46% of the people said, yes, I will enjoy it. 54% of... I think there's some lying going on in there. I think a lot of that 54% saying that they're not, that it's going to hurt too much, I think that they, if the trade gets made, they will have talked themselves into getting at least amped up for one night about the draft.
Yeah, that's like when somebody cheats on their spouse and claims they didn't even enjoy it.
Same thing.
No, you did, and that's what you really feel guilty
same
about.
Thing.
It's not just not even that you did it, it's that you genuinely enjoyed it. Yeah.
Seth Landry's in studio here. He's wearing his jammies. He slept up here last night.
Oh, did he?
He did.
Oh,
yeah.
You guys should have you and Amy should sleep up there this evening too if the heat's.
It's turned into damn summer camp up here. Landry was up here. George from the Bull was up here. It's like there's a bunch of people. We all live in the same grid.
You guys could have roast some marshmallows or something.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
Nobody's up here anyways, even when the power's on because of COVID. We could start a bonfire down by the ping pong table. We could chop up the ping pong table, turn it into a bonfire, buy another ping pong table before anybody knew anything happened.
You know what I love doing because we're in a fancy office building and we get there so early. Every morning, you know what I do? I go over to that one conference room and I act like it's my personal office. I've got a corner office. It's nothing but windows. I've got this massive desk and I sit there and I do whatever the hell damn I want. Sometimes I shut the door and have a time of it with myself.
That's a little graphic. You even sit at the head of the table just take the fantasy all the way complete. All right.
I'm joking about the having a time of it with myself thing there, obviously. Yeah. That would be grounds for firing.
People in positions of authority are listening.
Yeah.
All right, Seth, I am done. You are done. We are done. In the Loop is up next. Antibodies and warmth above anything else to you. Wish electricity
Antibodies and unfrozen controls at power generation plants to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. All right, antibodies to all of you. All of you are without power. Like us in this studio here right now. We have power in the studio, but Landry and I at our places of residence don't have it. We feel for you. We're here for you throughout the day today. Radio.com app. Keep that streaming on your phone. Keep everything charged up. Stay safe. Stay warm. We'll be right back here tomorrow. I promise you that. 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.